Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
It's a story that we kind of knew was coming at some point. Really, the question was who was going to go first with vaccine passports, statewide vaccine passports.
Now, New York doesn't have that yet?
No, surprisingly, New York, only the city has implemented vaccine passports.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. My friend in Long Island doesn't have to show his passport to go places, but if he went to New York City just, you know, 20 minutes to his west, then he would have to.
Correct. What happens if you're visiting New York City? Do you have to have a vaccine passport then?
I presume you do, yeah. You would not be able to go out to eat. You would not be able to go out to the theater. You wouldn't be able to go and, you know, probably to a museum or all the things that
Is
people
there
like
a government
to do.
Agency that's flooded with people going, like the new Ellis Island of vaccine passports, where people going into New York City have to stop and get their yellow star on their sleeve so that they can then pass?
That's an excellent question.
Like, how are they handling that?
Yeah, I don't know.
I bet it's bull. I bet it's something that no one should follow and everyone should just go about their daily lives a normal way.
I mean, I hope you're right about that, Matt. I hope there's a lot of people in private business who are refusing to enforce this thing. Because
if there were, it wouldn't be reported on. You wouldn't hear about it, but I bet you they're out there.
They must be. The question is, how widespread is it? There's definitely at least 15 or 20 states that would probably be interested in something like this, right?
Maybe,
although there are, as the story points out...
State least, governments, you mean?
Correct.
The people, probably not.
Yeah, thanks for clarifying that. The term state, when I'm using it, I'm talking about the government gang. I mean, that's ultimately... I don't use the term state generally to describe a plot of land or people or, innocent, peaceful people, because states are violent, monopolistic organizations who want to use, you know, the threat of force against you to get you to behave and do what they want. And so they do point out here that at least a dozen of these states have banned vaccine passports altogether. So obviously they won't be going along with this particular plan. But places like, you know, New York, Massachusetts, as they say, you know, Vermont certainly could, Illinois, California, Washington. I mean, these could all very well be candidate states for something like this. So that's what they're working on right now. The article just kind of goes on to general statements about Americans and support for vaccine passports. A September Gallup poll found that majorities of Americans favor proof of vaccination requirements for air travel, to attend large events, to go to an office or work site, to dine in at a restaurant, or stay at a hotel. Now, of course, you can't trust the numbers, right? Because obviously Gallup and any of these other organizations have an interest in supporting the status quo and supporting, you know, bigger government. We've been talking about GiveDirectly over the last several days here on Free Talk Live because we're raising some funds for GiveDirectly. We're actually matching up to $30,000. So Free Talk Live will match your donations to GiveDirectly, which is the first nonprofit that allows you to give directly to people living in extreme poverty. And, you know, when I first heard about this, my first concern was, well, wait a minute, how can you just give money to people? I mean, aren't they going to grow, you know, blow it on crack cocaine or something like that, or, you know, whatever their drug of choice is? Because that's what they would do here in the United States. But when you're in real poverty, things are way different for you. And Jason Waters, the CFO of GiveDirectly, is on with us here. We're not talking about people in, you know, America, so-called poverty here. We're talking about people who, you know, don't have running water, right? I mean, tell me about who this money's going to help and how it is that direct cash contributions to these folks makes a huge difference in their lives.
Oh, absolutely. And you've got it right. We operate in 10 countries in East and West Africa. We target our interventions towards people living on less than $1.90 a day, which is what the UN describes as extreme poverty. The choices at that level are not crack cocaine or cigarettes or booze, but, food, water. You're talking about a 5-mile walk to fresh water in a lot of cases.
Wow.
Getting enough calorie for your family and kids.
Have you actually been over to Kenya and wherever else in Africa that this money is being handed out?
Yep. Took a trip a couple months ago and did Kenya, Rwanda, and Democratic Republic of Congo.
Hmm. And what did you see?
Out in the field with our field team. All beautiful countries. Flying into the cities, everybody's trying to develop. Everybody's trying to grow. And in Rwanda, in Kenya in particular, Nairobi and Kigali, the capital, are
trying to become international cities and doing a pretty damn good job of it. Unfortunately, participation in that economic growth doesn't get out into the countryside in a lot of cases. And doing the field visits, you know, Kilifi, where we've been for a long time on the coast of Kenya, you know, small communes, you know, family, about 20, 30 people, brothers, cousins, etc., living in mud huts, living on grain. Closest fresh water source I saw driving in was about 6 miles from the village that I visited.
Wow.
And with, you know, there haven't been rains in a few years, and so people have moved from farming to making charcoal, and there weren't a whole lot of trees left. So things are pretty rough. And
wow.
Yeah, like talking to people, so A, they don't believe us. Like, no, like this level of generosity doesn't really exist in that part of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so it takes a couple hours to convince people we're not trying to scam them.
Bonnie, you'd asked a question that was sort of related to the one I was asking about, and that's how are payments working over there? The story mentions that we've been talking about is mobile money, and I know I heard years ago that people in Africa were really into trading mobile phone minutes as currency. Is that what we're talking
yep.
about here?
So it's got like one generation beyond that. Banks don't really function at that level of an economy.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, most of what happens is there's, you know, Safaricom is the biggest vendor, Vodacom, the next biggest, MTN. And you basically send credits to a SIM card, and that SIM card, they take it to an agent. Agent can hand them cash. They can spend the cash how they want to.
Wow. And so is that how GiveDirectly is dispersing the funds? You guys are basically sending minutes to a phone card?
More or less,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's basically how it works is we go do a registration census process. We have to run terror screening and watch list screening and all that other fun stuff. And if we can verify the identity and they qualify for the program, most cases they don't have a cell phone. And so we give them a cell phone, teach them how to use it. Send credits to a mobile money account, and then make sure they can go to a reputable agent, get the cash, buy what they want.
I was kind of hit by when he said, you know, buying a cow. Like, that's,
yeah.
Like, I've seen documentaries about, you know, the poverty in Africa, and it's, there's people eating, what do they call it, they're living on what they call lettuce, but it's basically just grass, like, that's
yeah.
around, and
really?
they boil the heck out of it, and they choke it down, and that's literally all they have. And if you have a cow, you are rich. You're like the rich guy.
Cow cuts your food bill in half for a family of four. Two cows gives you surplus to pay for your kids' school fees. It's huge.
Wow. Mm.
That's a big deal. That's a big advantage.
I'm glad that you're enjoying this work. It sounds really rewarding, and it makes, you know, an impact to help people like this. So kudos.
Thank you so much. And a big shout. I know you guys are big supporters of the crypto community. They gave us about $70 million this year, or
oh,
$70
awesome.
Million dollars to date, about $47 million this year.
Oh, that's a great question to ask. It sort of escaped me. You guys take crypto donations?
We are one of the few that will take pretty much everything that can happen. We've got our
okay.
own hard wallet. We've got third-party wallets. We do a lot in Ether. We take royalties from NFT auctions, from art blocks and folks like that.
This past weekend, I can't remember what day of the week it was, I heard you guys on Free Talk Live talking about Ukraine, and Ukraine's been in the news quite a bit this week,
mm-hmm.
or lately, and I wanted to share sort of a struggle, if you will, that I've been having, that I've been thinking about, that I think would be good to share with people.
Sure.
Sometimes it's so difficult to, you know, not to fall into that us versus them mindset. I heard someone say that, oh, I don't think any of our listeners would go to Ukraine. I've actually been there twice. And
wow.
I have some distant family connections there, and I've got some friends there. So on one hand, I can empathize with them and I guess the struggle that they're facing. But then,
for listeners that
hand,
don't know, supposedly the Russian government is amassing large numbers of troops just over the border from Ukraine. That's at least been in the news over the last week.
Yeah, and today, it was either today or yesterday, one of the U.S. senators for the state of Mississippi said that Biden should drop a nuclear weapons on Russia.
Oh my God.
Who
said
that?
I can't remember.
Mississippi.
It might be Wickham or something. I was curious to hear your thoughts going back to like 2014 when Russia invaded Crimea. What are your thoughts on that? I feel like that's a difficult topic, and the U.S. media, it's either biased U.S. media or biased Russian media, so I'm curious to hear your thoughts
on that. I don't know much about it. Can you give me a rundown? I mean, I don't even know where Crimea is.
So Crimea is the peninsula south of Ukraine, and it's been a part of Ukraine, I guess, since like part of the time in the Soviet Union. But in 2014, Russian forces invaded Crimea. They held a referendum, and the referendum said that like 97% of the country wants to be Russian.
Hmm.
So I don't know. On one hand, it's like, oh, well, the people want, you know, that's what people decided they want to do. But was it at gunpoint? Do they actually want to be? I don't know. It's really difficult for me to think about.
So Crimea is no longer considered part of Ukraine?
No one recognized it, or everyone recognized it as being Ukrainian, but it's de facto Russian right now.
Yeah, because I was going to say, I'm just looking at the Google map, and there is definitely like one of those dotted lines separating it from Ukraine as far as this looks like it is the national boundary line here. So here's one that some might find a little controversial. He said, quote, "If you're a Southern cop, you've probably got a couple bodies under your belt that you're not talking about," unquote.
Actually, pretty easy to believe.
I got to say, that is not fair to Northern cops to suggest that Southern cops are more likely than, I mean, does this suggest that Southern cops are more likely than other cops to have bodies? Or is he just saying that Southern cops have bodies too? I'm not real clear.
Just for the context, the reason he was talking about Southern cops in particular is because there was this scumbag politician in Louisiana during the Black Lives Matter protest last year that was saying, if a group of people comes into my town and wants to be, you know, Black Lives Matter protesters, I'm going to shoot them. And it was a episode with you and nobody talking. You guys came to find out that he was not undercover cop, a retired cop.
Mm.
And that's why nobody was saying, yeah, I'm sure he would shoot somebody.
Because he's done it before.
So, yeah. And Louisiana, I could believe that maybe they're the most dangerous cops, if not like Texas or Alabama.
Now, I mean, I've been on record before about the Keene, New Hampshire police. I do think they're not as bad as some of the cops down in Florida where I'm from.
Because they've been trained by you.
Going to say, they've been beaten in submission by Free Staters for the last 15 years. So
now they're talking about robot cops. Would that be an improvement over these out-of-control human psychopaths, or would it be
It's an improvement,
worse?
Yes, because I'm stocking up on high-powered magnets.
That's funny. I just ordered like 40 magnets today on Amazon.
Really?
Yeah, I did.
I'm going to just throw them at the robot dog cops when I see them, and it'll mess up their circuitry.
I hope so. I presume they've come up with, scenarios to deal with things like that. They probably have.
Man. Humans are always going to outsmart machines. Kind of that's why, I'm automatically thinking, I haven't even seen the machine. I'm already trying to think. I have a mechanical mind. I'm trying to think like, okay, where's the weak spot?
Just pour some, something nasty on it to gum it up.
Got some muriatic acid out in the barn.
All right, so Bonnie, what is this AI story you wanted to talk about here tonight?
It's an opinion piece from Al Jazeera, written by a woman named Gabriela Ramos. Artificial intelligence must not exacerbate inequality further. UNESCO has put forward a framework that can help reverse the negative trends in the AI revolution. Because, government always has great ideas on how to fix problems, and they always work out. We all agree that artificial intelligence, AI, has the power to drive development and even out global equalities. Inequalities.
I'm going to channel our Friday night co-host here, Chris Wade from Think Penguin and Freedom Decrypted. Because whenever AI comes up and he's in the room, he always points out that there's no AI like we think about it, right? Like in the movies with some sort of robot that can think at a, like a human level or even close to a human level. We don't have that. That's not coming right around the corner per se. AI is just programming. It's just programs written by people at this point. It's not upgrading itself. We haven't hit the singularity, right? We're not to that point.
There's no gray mass yet.
Yeah. So.
I saw a headline, but I didn't like research it or anything that said like blah, 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 invented the first AI computers that can reproduce with each other.
Oh, I've heard about this. Yeah,
but I'm like, not sure what that means.
They're like microorganisms or something like that, some sort of computer. Yeah, I saw that story. I took a look at it. I'm like, oh, that's interesting, and kind of moved along. I mean, because when I think about AI, I think about, and it is going to probably happen, and it will probably happen in our lifetime, and maybe sooner than we think. But, Matt, you play a lot of games when you get the chance. You're usually fighting against human opponents.
Yeah.
Have you ever played the single-player versions of any of these games?
They're really boring.
Forcing wealth redistribution, which sounds like what this woman is going to get to as her conclusion here.
That's part of the Great Reset. I think that's what they're going to. That's what they're after. They're trying to force.
Well, she's citing the IMF. I mean, these are Great Reset.
I think the articles like these are actually put out by the IMF because mm-hmm. they're the only people who are gone to for an opinion. You know, the IMF and you know the World Bank and places like that. The only people you hear. Getting to air an opinion or guidance in the article, they don't go to the local economics professor or me or somebody like that.
Well, you don't want to go to the local economics professor in most cases because they're probably a Keynesian, and as we just
it's probably true, but they're not approaching Walter Block.
We were doing a little bit of research and on the IMF, and guess who was one of the co-founders? John Maynard Keynes, who is the founder of Keynesianism, which is the
truth and the way and the light if you go to college for
the pro-government economics. People for economics.
Economics that just literally makes no sense when you actually start learning about the other types. Or, you know, the fact that Austrian economics is also out there, you're like, oh, wait, this makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, and if you look at modern economics, like what Keynesianism has led to, we live in a severely economically ill time. And it's propped up by, it's held together by tape at this point.
Basically, Keynesian economics is, you just keep spending money and that will make us somehow...
Just come out of a recession.
Yeah, but I think the Biden administration is going full on into that right now. And look how that's working out with record level inflation. Joa, from what I understand, you got arrested on your birthday?
I did.
Jeez.
Wrongfully.
Well, of course.
Wrongfully arrested.
Yeah.
Well, maybe they, you know, the sheriffs are doing what they're supposed to do. But apparently it was an error in the court system to the DMV.
Whoops.
And, and this has been ongoing, and I should be getting reimbursed for a couple reinstatement fees.
Hmm.
And
how about your lost time?
Things too.
I mean, how much time did you have?
How about your birthday party?
Yeah, like, you missed your party.
Well, I didn't miss my party.
Oh, really?
I was on my way. I was going to... No, I didn't miss it. I was totally there.
Oh, okay,
it was
cool.
Great. And, but anyway, I'm going to say this is one thing I love about the community. Is like, I didn't ask for a party. And, like, people just, like... brought themselves there. They knew I'd be there. And
I thought you were on your way to the party when you got arrested. I mean, that sounds like
late. I was going to go there. I was going there first.
Okay.
Stop there first and then change and go back. And they got me, you know. And
damn.
Yeah, it's ridiculous how they did it. And like, I really felt like threatened with my life at one point too, because the supervisor was not kind. And I was open carrying. And that's what we do here in New Hampshire.
The more people we can get holding these bureaucrats accountable, the better off we all are.
Yep. Joa's work, I think, is just invaluable at
it's
showing
incredible.
People what these bureaucrats are actually like. Like the fact that...
How rude that they can be.
Yeah. Or just the fact that they believe that they aren't even supposed to be filmed
right.
until they learn... through this process, actually, it's totally legal for him to film me.
Yeah, there's like something called the Eighth Amendment of the New Hampshire Constitution, if I recall correctly, that says government should be open and accountable. That's in the New Hampshire Constitution. So, yeah, he should be able to record, and so should you.
Yeah.
And, if you don't want to record bureaucrats' every interaction, at least learn your phone and learn how to use your recording feature on the phone so that way if some bureaucrat starts giving you trouble, just say, excuse me, one moment.
And am I getting that on the record?
Yeah, pull that phone out and say, excuse me, can you say that again? Right? So you can just have it ready to go if you're not going to just constantly do it like he does, which is, I love that. But, you know, these guys need to get used to being on the record. They need to get used to people seeing that, you know, how they behave, and then maybe they'll change how they, you know, their attitude. Recently, Boston Dynamics released video of dancing robots. Have you guys seen this stuff?
Yes.
Not the dancing ones necessarily, but I've seen their dogs.
The dog one is super creepy.
How about the one where the robot like runs around and like does jumping
yes.
flips
yeah.
and stuff?
That's scary.
Pretty crazy stuff. So they asked 1,200 people over at Tidio.com, T-I-D-I-O.com, and ask people questions about, well, what form should AI take to inspire trust? What responsibilities are we willing to delegate to artificial intelligence? Which professions will be automated by machines and software? And here's some of the statistics that they claim are 9 shocking AI stats. The survey revealed that more and more people are open to the idea of incorporating AI into their daily lives. They don't mind AI taking over everyday tasks or being involved in decision-making processes. On the other hand, AI adoption is fraught with doubts and concerns about risks. Here are some of the more interesting trends. So, as I mentioned before, 69% roughly of college graduates believe AI could take their job or make it irrelevant in a few years.
Not your job, then. It's the robot's job.
Well, that's an important point about jobs generally that you've just touched on there, Bonnie. It's not your job. You may be in that position, and you may be good at that position, but ultimately, it's the owner of the company's job. And the owner of the company has to do what they consider to be the best thing for their business.
People might think that I sound mean or rude when I'm saying like, oh, I didn't care if my fellow employees lost their jobs because Walmart turned into a vending machine. Mm-hmm. But the reality is they would still have jobs. They're the lowest. I mean, the people that I worked with at Walmart for the most part are like the lowest low skill, but also mm-hmm. lowest wanting to do as much as they could for their lives. People,
they had no ambitions.
Lowest ambition mm-hmm. people. So if you want to be the lowest ambition person in the robot world, you can be the person who dusts the robots. And if that doesn't make you enough right. money, you're going to have to get some more ambition and
that's
energy. These people would be like, ugh, it's time for us to go face the shelves and just act mm-hmm. like it was like, you know, so hard. And, you know, I just can't stand people like that.
Sounds like you are the right person to leave that job.
Yeah, I quit on Halloween because they scheduled me.
Which was the right move.
I think that with service merchandise, it was probably, I'm just going to guess, just from my few experiences of shopping there, you know, you had to wait, right? There wasn't that instant gratification of, ooh, you know, grab the Lego thing, put it in your, as a kid, right? That's what I was interested in back then.
Sure.
Like, grab the Legos off the shelf, put it in the cart, and go check out. No, you had to go and give a ticket, and then you had to wait till the thing came on the conveyor belt. And so you didn't have that instant gratification, and that's what people are looking for. They're not looking to wait around. And
I thought the conveyor belt was so cool, though.
According to a survey conducted by Tidio, Tidio.com. They surveyed over 1,200 people, and nearly 69% of college graduates think AI could take their job and make it irrelevant in a few years. And they're predicting cashiers, drivers, and translators are going to be some of the first jobs to be replaced. Third point, more than 45% of people have a positive attitude toward AI taking control of the economy. Some claim that AI could prevent corruption and improve the economy. Well, as long as there's a government gang around, you're not going to prevent corruption. They're firmly ensconced in control over our lives, and power corrupts. And if they start using robots, it'll just, you know, they'll just be robots used to abuse and harm people, like those cop police robots. More than 60% of respondents would use a self-driving AI taxi during heavy traffic.
Terrifying.
According to that story. Would you? Would you guys?
No.
Yeah. I'd give it a shot. Why not?
During heavy traffic, I wonder if that would mean that it's safer because the thing's going slower.
The idea of, like, speeding at, like, 70 miles an hour down a highway, on something that I can't control is just no.
Well,
I mean,
the question is a taxi. So would you take any taxi? Because you're not in control of a human-controlled taxi.
Well, even a human isn't in control of it. It's kind of scary because it could just be like, this is the turn. Like, sometimes Google Maps does that. It's just like, this is the turn.
You know, it's obvious that Russian communists have never been collapsed, and they've never been capitalist, because they're ready to invade Ukraine and take it back like it was before, up to, was it Eastern Europe? The Soviet Union had control and authority over the all of Eastern Europe.
Hold on a second. Wait a minute. Sarah, aren't you a communist?
Well, yeah, you remember, huh?
Yeah,
right?
I remember. I remember you saying you were going to, like, commie meetings. So are you in favor of invading Ukraine?
Well, of course. Of course. Yes.
Oh, my gosh. Why?
Why are you so
What kind
nice?
Of a monster are you?
Well, you know, the thing is that they're able to do this because our U.S. is so weak right now. They want
no, that didn't answer me. Why would you be in favor of invading peaceful people? Why would you be in favor of that, even as a communist?
Well, because the communist ideal is a really wonderful thing to have, to make everybody equal. And
has that been working for Russia?
Ever.
No, it didn't.
No, I mean, it's working for the people. I mean,
no,
you have your separate country, but it'll be more equal. Like,
they have laws against being gay in Russia.
They do.
Well, the thing is, you know, that it's sad. But I mean, it's kind of like they would, like, kill people like Trump, for example, a capitalist.
I wish to address the root of the tree instead of pruning the branches.
Hmm.
I mean, we've been suffering from government takeover on all fronts. It seems to be an insurmountable battle to most of us. I mean, it's inconceivable that our own country could be attacking us.
But, why is that inconceivable?
Well, how can you believe that all of the peaceable things that surround you can be consuming you? And I mean, I'm better than 6 decades old. And I have watched the world change before my eyes. It's like I woke up as Rip Van Winkle.
Well, I don't consider the people, first of all, I consider the people around me to be mostly peaceful, but the government people are not. And so, of course,
well,
they're going to consume.
What I'm talking about is the consumption of the government. Mm. I'm going back to the New Deal. This is the first time that it was financially, fiscally responsible to take the father out of the home.
Do you think that's when that started?
Is that when they added more social programs? Or
the New Deal was a huge addition of social programs.
Mm. Oh, yeah. This is FDR. The first time FDR the
was
Democrats
basically a full-blown socialist.
Were voted in.
Yeah.
And now we're confronted with the new Green Deal.
Sure. Or the Build Back Better. I mean, they're really talking about dwarfing the New Deal as far as what it did. It's sort of like the newest version of that.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more, all for free at freetalklive.com.